This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield, and joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Hey, a welcome to you, Damon.
Thank you. And Justin Davis.
Scoop.
We got a great show for you this week. We've got a question from one of our listeners looking for suggestions for video game related coffee table books. And I hope you have set aside some time because we have a lot.
Video game related?
We are in possession of a lot of those such objects. But first, as we near the end of March, the end of Q1, as they say, it is time. I don't make the rules, but it is time to start Game of the Year Watch 2024.
We could just cut it here, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
We don't need any more video games. We're good.
I mean, there have already been a lot of great games this year. I'd like to know what you both would pick for your favorite so far. But I do think, looking at the broader like gaming community, I think there are two front runners. Let me know if you disagree. I believe it would be Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and Helldivers 2.
Ooh.
I thought you were going to say Prince of Persia.
I think it's up there. I think if we were like, I think it would be a nominee if we were picking nominees today. But I don't think it's one of the two front runners.
Interesting. Yeah. I also thought you might say Yakuza because that's the first one that IGN gave a 9 out of 10, as far as I know.
Also would be a nominee, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's called Like a Dragon now. But yeah, what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Infinite Wealth.
So that means Final Fantasy's not climbing your list yet.
Wait, what do you mean?
Did you say it wasn't?
I think it's one of the two frontrunners, that and Helldivers.
Oh, it's one of the two frontrunners. Okay, yeah. Okay. Got it.
What a great quarter for video games. And also, like, these, like, just incredibly 100-hour games, right? We'd have had, like, three of them already this year that are all really excellent.
Yeah.
Please go down. Stop.
What? The games that we've got, we haven't given any 10s this year yet. However, the games that we've given a 9 so far this year include Balatro, which I played the hour-long trial on PS Plus, and I love it.
Of course. It's so good. I'm so addicted. I mean, I'll talk about, if we do games for gaming, I'll share what I'm playing. I did have something peel me away from Balatro, but like I put a lot of hours into that game in an intensely brief period of time.
Yeah. No, I instantly loved it. I know it's going to be something I want to sink more time into, but I just can't right now because my game of the year so far is Unicorn Overlord, and I can't stop playing that. Oh, I love it so much. Final Fantasy VII would be the runner-up for me so far, but man, Unicorn Overlord is like, it's the game that I want to just hang out in and play every night, and I love it. It's got its hooks in me. It's so good.
I honestly forgot about it. And like, it's Vanillaware, which I love. And it's sort of a Tactics Ogre style game, which you don't get a lot of those these days, which I love. Like, it's such a, I don't like believe in video game backlogs. It's like, just play whatever you want, whenever you want to. But like, I am feeling a certain amount of like, I want to get to Final Fantasy. I want to get to Unicorn Overlord. Like, I want to get to Yakuza. Like, it's really hard to keep up right now.
It is. Anyway, Balatro and Unicorn Overlord both got 9s. So did Sons of the Forest, Final Fantasy VII, Rebirth, Helldivers 2, Persona 3, Reload, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, and Tekken 8. Those are all the 9s of the year so far.
Mm-hmm. What a great list. I mean, Persona 3 as well. Like, I know, actually I've never played Persona 3, but I know it's very, very well liked among, Persona super fans, and it's up there with like, like an analogy I would make is like Dragon Quest V, or like a lot of people consider that one of the greatest Dragon Quests. And, you know, apparently the remake, you know, is like a ground up, like they did it up right and made it feel like a new game. So that would be another one that like Persona 5 was excellent, right?
Yeah.
I don't know when I'm ever going to get to it.
There are some notable eights too. Like we said, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, I think really surprised a lot of people. And in fact, in our ongoing face-off on IGN.com, where the audience is voting on their favorite games of the year, Prince of Persia is at number 3 after Final Fantasy and Helldivers 2.
Yeah, it's my number one. It's been the most like beatable game for me this year. It's just like I couldn't not beat that game. And I'm really, really dedicated to beating Final Fantasy VII right now. But like that means I've been playing a lot of it each night, and like it is getting a little bit repetitive in its town world building, or town open world, town open world, town open world, and the towns are all mini games, or a lot mini games. And it's so cool and like neat looking and unique, and the cutscenes are great and stuff like that. So, but as I've said in the show, that doesn't tend to hold my attention, but it is for this so far. But Prince of Persia was the gameplay game, so I really should give Unicorn a try, because that's probably more of a gameplay game that'll hook me.
Maybe. I don't know if it's a Sammy game or not.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I do like, you know, I just playing Advance Wars. I know it's a different type of tactical game, but I like tactical games, and I actually like the Super Nintendo Ogre Battle. Like I played that game enough to know what it was all about. That game's ugly but really fun.
That's great. That's what I'm often described that way.
There was also PAL World, which, you know, had a big moment at launch, but I think maybe that game's moment has passed. And unless there's some sort of like a big update to add something significant to it.
That's right. You know, it's an early access game, and to make that much of a splash as an early access game and not really have a roadmap or concept of like when we're going to get, you know, what they're going to add, which is basically like, you know, the Master League Pokemon gyms and stuff like that, you know, like those hints are all in the game. So that's an amazing life cycle for that game to have kicked it off. That it's the opposite of Baldur's Gate 3 right now.
Literally made so much money, they didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, it was the headline. Like I played Power World, like it feels like an early access game. You know, very unfinished. It looks like, look, we made a video game. It's very rough around the edges. Like, check out what we have so far. Like that's the feeling that I got from it. And it's a lot more of a tree puncher than I think maybe some people expected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I guess Peach didn't get huge scores, but I'm going to play that game because I'm helping out with the guide for it. So I'm going to put in my hours for that this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. And like, you know, it looks more like in the review, it even said this, and I predicted this, but it's more like a, you know, Yoshi Yarn or Kirby Yarn game than it is like a Mario Wonder. But maybe the collectibles are fun, and we'll see. It looks like it's stylish.
Yeah, my son was watching just gameplay of it on YouTube last night, and he was into it. He said, we should get this game, Daddy.
Aw, that's adorable.
Gotta get this game. There's also Dragon's Dogma 2, which is out now, and we gave that an 8. I spent a few nights with that game.
Yeah.
It didn't really grab me. What was kind of a turnoff for me. I think the game is like pretty ugly, has really bad animations, and just the worst lip syncing that I've seen in a AAA game in a very, very long time. Like literally everyone's mouth is just like, that's what they're.
But they also speak in a funny old English fake dialect too, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
that part doesn't bother me as much, but
it really bothers another one of our coworkers. Damon's in a camp. There's two camps at IGN of people that love this game and people that don't like it. But the camp of don't like it is just him and one other person. It's very funny.
It's a camp of two people.
Yeah. Who, Altano? I know Altano is not crazy.
No, it's John Davison.
Oh, okay. There are three of us.
So I mean, Altano also?
Yeah. It just doesn't feel polished. It's like super janky. And when I'm coming off of something like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth that I think is super polished, it's like, I don't think this is up to the standards of other recent games. I don't think it's up to Capcom standards. Like Capcom usually makes really great looking games. I realize it's an open world.
RE Engine.
You know, it's an open world, but like there's like Horizon Forbidden West is an open world RPG that has great animation, amazing facial animation.
Well, they're looking to fix some of that stuff first from what we've heard. You know,
they're working on the frame rate,
but lip sync, I don't know.
Yeah, the frame rate didn't really bother me. It's just like it's lip syncing, and then just kind of the bad animation of characters in general.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's not any fun to be had. It, you know, as an open world game, interesting things can happen when you're out in the countryside and you encounter monsters and your pawns are doing God knows what. Like, they can be funny, but the whole thing just feels kind of janky and unpolished, and not up to the standards of other recent AAA games.
Guide writers love it. They're so into it, and they say that people that really like Dragon's Dogma will absolutely love this game, and that they're not in that kind of the jankest part of the experience situation. Yeah. Like, I have heard that about Dragon's Dogma before. They don't think that. They just think it is what you were just saying. Like, it's just like an open world full of possibilities and really difficult stuff. Like, I've said this before, but I really respect an open world where you can run into the wrong thing and get your butt kicked. You know, that's what a lot of people like about Elden Ring. I just thought it tilted too far into everything kicks your butt. So you need to find the things that you can't, that don't kick your butt. I think that's kind of stupid too. Mm. I like the mix to be a little bit different than that.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying, add this game to the backlog pile, but I've been enjoying it vicariously on social media. It's a very clippable game.
Totally.
I saw a clip of someone, they were trying to get across this huge chasm, and there was like a rope bridge on the other side, but it was on the other side. They couldn't get to it. And so they picked up one of their pawns and just hurled them over 30 yards, like just hucked them across this chasm and then had them land. And then, you know, the AI was smart enough to lower the rope bridge. So, cool. I feel like it's a very kind of, you know, goofy game in that way, very clippable. Yeah. And I also think, like, look, like, I respect, I've said it on Scoop many times, like, I don't like games that play it safe. I don't like games that are samey. And this is a fantasy open world RPG, which could have been, you know, it could have been The Witcher. It's a game we've seen a million times, but it's different. Carves out its own identity, plays different. The AI pawns, like, that's a very different system. There's more kind of systemic gameplay in Dragon's Dogma. So that, you know, like, that's what makes it go from a game of like, oh, maybe I'll eventually get around to it, to like, no, I definitely have to play this. Mm.
Well, internally shared, I think it was Ronnie on the guides team shared a video of that exact chucking of a pawn. That's and so completely good. Missed the cliff. The pawn just fell to its death right short of the cliff, and it's just the funniest clip.
Cool. So yeah, with all that said, I do think Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and Helldivers 2 would be the front runners. Final Fantasy being the long-awaited remake of one of the most loved games of all time, that they did it right, and it's a great remake, and it's operating at the highest level of polish and production values, and it's fantastic. And then Helldivers 2 kind of was a surprise. It's just been like a big, you know, a multiplayer cooperative party game for people that they just love to hook up with their friends every night, and it's had much longer legs than something like Pal World has had. So I'd be interested to see how that changes going forward. Justin, I pick Unicorn Overlord, my favorite game so far this year. Sam picks Final Fantasy. What would you pick, Justin?
No. What? I picked Prince of Persia.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. Prince of Persia.
Yeah, man. Sorry. I guess that was the whole prompt question that started this section. I mean, so I have this sickness where, like, I mentioned it on the show, where Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I'm like, well, I want to
play. It's War Fortress. I already know what's coming.
It probably would be. So it's like I started Remake over again, and then with Yakuza, that made me go back and revisit some older Yakuza games. And so, you know, I'm having a hard time. You know, it's like out of the games that just came out, I don't know how many of them I've spent a meaningful enough time with to play. The game that I have played the most hours in that we name dropped in this section is Blotro. So maybe just by default, that's my choice for this quarter so far. It really is that good, you know, but that's doing a disservice to the games I haven't had a chance to get to yet. And Damon, what the game that I'm really playing a lot of right now, there was a gigantic update that just dropped for Stardew Valley, and it got me back into that.
Yeah, I'm hyped.
Big 1.6 update. It lets you put hats on cats. So cool. I don't really know what more anybody needs to know. No, it's like, it really is.
Lets you drink mayo. That's a big deal.
Yeah, lets you drink mayonnaise. No, like it's just like everything in this game. The update is a labor of love and is produced by somebody that really deeply understands their game and what people like about it and what their kind of like pain points are about it. Like that feeling of a developer that's still updating a game 6, 7, 8, 10 years later and have just like just completely addressed all the weird stuff that built up over the years and have just, it's just made it perfect. And man, Stardew. What a game.
I just want to point out that you can drink mayonnaise in real life. You just have to cut it with a little bit of water or milk.
I was going
to
say, if the mayonnaise is in a state that is drinkable, I don't think you should drink it.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Does that appeal to you? To y'all, maybe empty a little bit out of the jar, fill some warm tap water in there, mix it up with a spoon, and then chug it down. That's, you know, gamer snacks is what we call that. One hand, you know? One hand, yep. You can play Stardew. One hand,
yep.
Chug some mayo.
The game is so addictive. And it's been years since I did like a real, like, I'm back into Stardew heavy. And like, that's what it has my claws into me deep right now.
Who are you going to romance?
Abigail.
Which one is that?
The purple haired girl.
Okay. I romance the mean girl, the blonde girl.
Yeah, I don't care.
She did like photography, but she's also mean to you even after you're married. But I thought I like a challenge, you know? Boss level.
I do think Belacher has the potential to be like sort of a dark horse candidate for a Game of the Year nomination. Because everyone who plays it says they're super addicted to it, which I think is a funny way to describe a gambling game. you know, it's not everyone on staff has played it yet. Everyone who does admits that it's awesome. And then it has sold a million copies out there already. So Belacher is doing well. I think word of mouth will travel and more will check that game out over the year.
It's really good. The runs, I mean, I and I'm not down on it at all. I just named it. It's probably my game of the year front runner. For me, it has a similar thing as Binding of Isaac, where I find the runs to be a little bit on the long side. Like, I wish every animation and every movement in the game was like, you know, 25% faster. Like, because they take, you know, it's like these 30-minute runs, and then sometimes you make it to the final, you know, the end, the boss blind, and then you lose, and you're like, well, okay, that sucked. Like, you know, Splunky had some of that too, actually, come to think of it. Maybe I just wish every game, like, as soon as in, like, Vampire Survivors, you unlock, like, the double speed mode. Like, I never played it on regular speed again.
Well, Scoop Nation, if you want to check it out, like I said, there is an hour-long trial available on PlayStation Plus. Justin, has there been, what's the garlic like of the year so far? Has there been a good new one?
I can't remember when it came out. It might have been late December, but the most recent one that I got really into was the Deep Rock Survivors. They made it Survivors-like from that franchise with the dwarves digging in the dirt and stuff, and it's really good.
Is it called Deep Rock Survivors?
I can't remember. If you Google Deep Rock Survivors, that would bring up the game, but I can't recall if that's the exact name of it or not. I think so.
Cool. Yeah,
that's the one that jumps to mind. That one's really good.
Okay. All right, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Well, hello.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Bob in Calgary, Alberta did.
Bob Tony style.
Bob says, I wanted to send my sincere thanks to all of you for the much-needed respite during the pandemic. For context, my son was born in late 2019. Same, Bob. So by the time my wife, a teacher, went back to work in August 2020, I took paternity leave to stay with him. Sitting at home during a lockdown with minimal adult contact or conversation was a shockingly depressing time, and my mental health plummeted. I searched for something to occupy my brain while I would keep physically busy with my 10-month-old son. I tried serious podcasts. Bad idea. Sports podcasts. Pretty boring when everything was shut down. And a few other genres before I found GameScoop. I can't say this with enough heartfelt sincerity. The four of you, Damon, Sam, Justin, and Tina, RIP, helped me stay calm and sane throughout some very weird times. I binged back probably 100 episodes throughout the 2.5 months at home, and you were saviors. So I wanted to pose a topic for the panel. Every so often, you reference or mention various coffee table books or books that focus on gaming moments or history. I'm always intrigued by those comments and would love to hear a list of must-reads or otherwise important or interesting gaming books. Well, settle in, Bob. Actually, I want to show, this is one I'm reading right now. This is called It's Not All Fun and Games, A Life in Film Production, Video Games, and Toys. It's by Mark Flipman. It's from Press Run, which is Limited Run's press outlet. And I was not familiar with Mark Flipman, but Mark was a video game producer in the late 80s and 90s, worked at Acclaim, and he worked on a lot of licensed products. He worked on, you know, the Simpsons games and Spider-Man Maximum Carnage and the wrestling games. And he was there when they had the license, the home console license for Mortal Kombat 1 and 2.
Cool.
And also Mark was important to a couple games that were important to me. His first job in the late 80s was at Mindscape, and he was a tester on the Mac version of Shadowgate. And then he went to Konami, and he worked on the King's Quest V NES port for Konami. And he even worked with Roberta Williams on that one. So this has been a very interesting read, focusing mostly on producing licensed games in the late 80s and early 90s. One thing to keep in mind, though, this is kind of like an autobiography for Mark. So there's like chapters about his life that don't have anything to do with video games. So just a heads up about that. But I think it's interesting.
I want to that book sounds very, very interesting, but I'm going to cry foul. I don't think that's big enough. I think a coffee table book has to be big and have edge to edge art.
I have those too, but I just wanted to share that I was reading this book.
Fair enough.
Okay, show us a real coffee table book, Justin.
Oh boy.
Oh, it's heavy.
This is It's called Pac-Man: Birth of an Icon.
I've never seen this.
If you're watching on the show, the slip cover comes off and makes a little Pac-Man. And
I've never seen this.
And it's so got the garbage.
It also has another slipcover. And inside there's two things I want to show off about this. One, it comes with Pac-Man Fever on an LP.
Amazing.
Nice. It's evidence.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And then the book itself.
Great song. Actually, what's the B side? Do the Donkey Kong?
I wish. And then, you know, I don't like that's honestly basically it. Like the book is just really, really well done.
It's gorgeous.
Just like full of
that's
really,
so cool.
Really
yeah, what
gorgeous.
An amazing compendium. And then I hear that has like a bunch of the paraphernalia and stuff in Pac-Man, right?
Yeah. So it's not just focused on the video game, but also like the marketing exactly and the paraphernalia and like all the stuff that kind of surrounded Pac-Man Fever. And that book comes from a publisher called Cook & Becker that makes, you know, like higher end, you know, art books and things like that. Like, stuff that they also make like stationery and things like that. But yeah, Cook & Becker, they make a lot of really, really good stuff.
That special edition, Justin, is $150.
Yeah, I should point out just for the sake of ethics that I think everything else I'm going to show off, I paid for, but that one I did not pay for. That was
That's really cool. Sam, what you got?
Well, I'll do a joke one first.
Okay.
This, just to follow Justin, this is cool. This is Pac-Mania. It is the 96 pack-filled pages of biting humor, the official Pac-Man joke book. So this would have come from your Scholastic Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it has jokes like a drawing of Pac-Man with a fang, and it says, Count Pacula. That's all it is.
What was that one next to it?
Biting the finger.
I don't know. Oh, that one was thumb pack because it's Pac-Man, but he has a spike below him, and the finger is pushing him downward, so he's a thumb pack.
Okay,
got it. Okay, here we go. Well, I'm not going to show that one. All right, they're too stupid. They're too stupid.
No, but
I don't want to spoil it. Okay, so here's a real one. And I think coffee table books, to Justin's point, he's right about them. They should be big and glorious and wide. But I also think you need to have a little book on top of your coffee table book just to make your room look lived in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I always All right. Here's one. And I have to do a disclosure for this, too. This is called the N64, a visual compendium. It has like 20 slip cases, too. Let me just take this one's a hollow or what's it called? A lenticular cover. Which you can't see on camera very easily. It's got beautiful interior thing. And look, the bookmarky things are all colored like the discs for. Anyway,
cool.
What this is, it is a book of every single N64 game, just kind of explaining what they are, why they exist. And it's part of a series that are really pretty and they're really neat. They're from Bitmap Books. And why I need to disclose them is that I've contributed to a lot of these, including this one. I wrote the Majora's Mask section of it, the Banjo-Tooie section, some other stuff. So it's really fun. I really like that series. That's brand new. That just came out, and it's part of my my ongoing contributions. But I did not contribute to a lot of them. Like Sega, I probably missed the deadline or something like that. So get that one, and I can't even endorse it. But it's probably amazing because the rest are really, really great.
Yeah, I have the NES one. I think the Atari 7800 one.
I have had one. If eagle-eyed GameScoop viewers will know that there's been one on my shelf behind me for a long time. Right?
Is that the NES one?
I have several. I can't remember. Yes.
They're so cool. I really like the lenticular covers for them. Really.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Bitmap Books does. I mean, this is basically all they do, is do really cool video game coffee table books. They did that PC Engine box art collection that I showed off a while ago mm-hmm. that I have near me. Okay, this one's more of a coffee table book. This is the unofficial SNES Pixel book. Cool. Showing off the great pixel art from the Super Nintendo. So it does also have a little slipcase cover there. And it's just a really nice put together. So like this is a showcase on some of the good RPG art in Final Fantasy games and all the other JRPGs on the Super Nintendo. This is just showing off some of the Disney and Mickey Mouse games that are on there. So it's just showing off the art of the Super Nintendo, and it's all really well done. Here's Super Metroid as well.
What a layout. That's so cool looking. Yeah.
Look at that full page Kraid sprite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible.
It really lets you appreciate how good the pixel art was. This is Proteus. I've never seen or played this game, but this is pixel art mm-hmm. on the Super Nintendo. It looks so good.
That's amazing. Yeah. Amazing. See,
what I really like about books like this is that, like, because sometimes I'm like, do I just have nostalgia goggles? And then you see something like that and you're like, no, like, it was better then.
It was.
It's the children who are wrong.
Yes. Justin, you have another one?
Yeah. So I was going to shout out Bitmap Books. I was going to show off a bunch of them, but I'll skip it because Sam, you covered it. But they're all excellent. I actually don't own any of them that are bad. Their art of point and click adventure games is really good.
That one's amazing.
Their CRPG book is really good. Their JRPG book is really good. But this one,
I haven't even opened it yet. This is the point and click one.
Yeah, that's the one I was just going to pick up and show off. But yeah,
I haven't opened mine.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. This is Raising the Bar, The Art of Half-Life 2.
And I mainly,
this is a little bit of like a flex because this is rare. Like it's hard to find. And and so, you know, what's interesting about this one is that it was made and officially endorsed by Valve. And so that's very common now. Most developers and publishers sort of will release these art books and making of books. But it was a lot less common when this was made. Like, I won't claim it's like the first one or anything. But at the end, it has, I don't know how well this is going to show through. But like, it's got these really nice, like full page sort of vignettes of just like the mood and vibe of the game. And it's really good. I think that like I saw this starting to get rare. It might even be why I signed up for like an eBay account, right? And I bought a copy and they're like $250 now. They're really hard to find. But I snagged one 10 or 15 years ago and it's been a prized possession ever since.
Wow. Cool. Sam, you got another one?
Yeah. All right. So this is a very, very well-worn book. It's called Arcade Fever by John Sellers. It is just, my copy is just destroyed. But that's because I got this in 2001 before I ever bought an arcade machine. And it really showed me why arcade machines and their kind of physical formats were important and interesting. And so I really recommend this, not only for people that like maybe don't know a lot about this stuff, but kind of as a gift for people that might be interested in a coffee table book to kind of get to know the era of arcades. It's just about, you know, there's bigger, thicker books about arcade machines, but not many. And I'll show one if we have time. But this one is just the curation of the choices is like based on neat stuff and just games that look beautiful. And like, really, I like, you know, ended up buying 20, 30 arcade machines, like based on, you know, probably seeing a lot of them here first, because I didn't live through that era. I, you know, was born after the arcade era. And so I had to kind of research it that way. So I highly recommend that one, Arcade Fever. Great section, like, with an interview on with Buckner and Garcia too.
I think I have that one too somewhere.
Cool.
It looks so familiar.
Yeah, mine's falling apart.
This is a good one. This is FF Dot. It's the pixel art of Final Fantasy.
It just goes
through all the original Final Fantasy pixel art games. It goes through game by game and shows off every sprite and every frame of animation for every sprite.
Which is neat because usually you see art books based on the is it Toriyama? Is that the artist? I forget, but yeah, that draws the nice painterly versions and stuff. But these are the pixel versions, the ones that matter.
The color palette for each character. It's so good. That's a really good one. All right, one more each. Justin, you got one more?
Yeah. Yep. Okay, it's a twofer though. So, oh god, they're heavy too. So this is Supercade Volume 1 and Volume 2. They're really, really good. They're put together by, you know, Van Burnham, who's a, you know, video game industry luminary. She, I think these days is most well known for sort of curating, you know, arcade exhibitions and sort of exhibits. But just, oh man, I should have bookmarked some really, really cool pages, but it's just a really, really detailed deep dive into arcades and early arcades. And it goes year by year. Like, this is 1971 to 1984. So like early arcade era. And then I think like for a long time, it didn't sort of seem like a sequel book was going to come out. Look at how good that picture of Zaxxon is. Yep. And then the sequel covers 1985 to 2001. So, you know, obviously a lot more history there. And then it's not just actually arcade games. So it's got, you know, sections on Doom. Cool. And I think like, dude, I collect a lot of these books. I think Supercade might be my favorite. Like, look at how gorgeous this Prince of Persia page is.
That's nice.
So Supercade, volume 1, volume 2.
I have volume 1. I'll have to get volume 2. Volume 2. Sam, hit us. All
right. Well, next up on my list was also Supercade. With my copy of it. So I will go to my next one. Love it. And I was going to mention one thing that I really like about it is that it goes early to the 70s stuff. So it does have the really nice Atari art and then like old vectors and stuff like that. And it's actually been really helpful for me because that's an era that I actually really like is the 70s. Arcade games that are not covered in the previous book I showed. All right, so I will end on, well, first of all, I'll mention this other one if Damon doesn't choose it for his last one, but non-game, the best coffee table book of all time, I think, the Mystery Science Theater 3000 Amazing Colossal Episode Guide. Get this if you're an MSD fan. It is a perfect coffee table book. It has some of the funniest jokes that staff ever wrote, and I just absolutely adore every page of this, and I've read it a million times throughout my life. And I just wanted to give it a special shout out because it's rarely left my coffee table since I was, I don't know, young enough not to have coffee. And I have it signed by the whole crew now after many years of pursuing that. Love it.
That's cool. But so is it just like a collection of some of their favorite jokes over the years?
No, sorry. It is an actual episode guide with movie stats.
Gotcha.
And so it talks about the movies, when they're from, and it outlines the host segments. So the skits. It talks about what they did in each one. And then it has like little box outs about some of their favorite actors and like these kind of notables that they make fun of a lot, maybe like kind of explaining some of their in jokes. And then it has some appendices. Oh, it has an appendice of the jokes that nobody got, like the, you know, the 50 most obscure references. They're so good. But I forgot to mention the Arcade Fever book. I love appendices and, you know, ever since the Lord of the Rings. Right. But it has one that's Arcade Lexicon. Back to this one, the Arcade Fever book. And most of it's made up, I suspect. But one is Pong. And it says adjective, something dated. Example, look at that really old guy in the Ladybug machine. He's so Pong.
I want to bring that back.
Yeah. Can you do that to the Game Scoop Lexicon? Look at that guy in the Ladybug machine, which is like so it me now. I'm the old guy in the Ladybug machine.
Yeah. It's like Dragon's Dogma 2 only has one save slot for your whole game. That's exactly. So Pong.
That's so Pong.
We can make it happen. I have like a pile of books here. I don't know which one to pick.
I thought you were going to choose this one, Damon, potentially.
Well, except that I feel like we've discussed that fairly recently. The NES Endings Compendium is also one that I highly recommend. Yes. Not a coffee table book, but it's one of the first books on the gaming industry that I ever read. This is Game Over, for Start to Continue. This is about Nintendo and basically how Nintendo conquered the world of video games. But the interesting thing is that this book was published in 1993. So you're only going to go up to Super Nintendo. However, this book will tell you how Nintendo was founded in 1889. And it goes through all the different businesses that they tried during the 20th century, from bowling alleys to love hotels, of course, playing cards, and then to children's toys and gadgets, and then finally landing on arcade games, and then taking over the home console market. It will tell you how Hiroshi Yamauchi, the former head of Nintendo, sent his son-in-law over to America to start Nintendo of America and try to sell Radar Scope arcade machines, but then when that failed, they just switched them all over to Donkey Kong arcade cabinets, and then how they had the job of selling the Nintendo Entertainment System to people who had very, very suspicious of video games after the crash of the market and everything. So this is also a super interesting book.
If there's facts wrong in that book, we'll never know because the entire internet has used that for the basis of every single bit of knowledge about Nintendo ever. It is just so definitive, and it's just not ever been outdone or re-researched.
Yep.
Brilliant book. And I'm not saying it's inaccurate. I'm just making a statement about how much it's referenced.
Yep. There's a whole chapter on how MCA's lawyers came after him for using Donkey Kong, trying to claim copyright infringement over King Kong. And then there's a whole chapter on the whole Tetris debacle and all that. So it's great. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the U.S. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Let's see. Let's do extracurricular activities. I've watched 2 films recently. I watched Eli Roth's Thanksgiving, the full movie based on his trailer. First of all, I'm going to guess neither of you have seen this movie. Is that correct?
No. No.
Nope.
Well, it's okay. It's not great. It's not terrible. It's just sort of okay. Are you guys familiar with the trailer?
Yeah.
No. This movie's based on?
The fake horror movie that then they made into a real horror movie.
Yeah. Right? So whatever, 2008, whenever it was, when Grindhouse was in theaters with Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror and Tarantino's Death Proof, they came along with a bunch of fake horror movie and Grindhouse trailers. And Eli Roth did one called Thanksgiving, which is one of the more memorable ones. And now he just like made that into a full feature film. And it's okay. It's fine. They recreate a lot of the memorable moments from the trailer. But first of all, I didn't see any trailers for this full-length film. So initially I was disappointed that it's not a Grindhouse film. He did not make it in the grind. It's not made to look like a cheap 70s exploitation film. It's just a slick modern horror film.
Okay.
But there's some good kills, and the kills are done practically for the most part. I appreciate that. I do feel like they kind of messed up. The most iconic scene from the trailer is the trampoline scene. Definitely know what I'm talking about if you've seen it. But in the movie, they kind of like, they set it up to be a big deal, but they do it with 2 characters that aren't actually important. And you're like, it feels kind of like wasted. They also try to like remix that scene in a way that I don't think really, basically it's just not as effective as it was in that original trailer. Anyway. That one was fine. And then that's on Netflix if you want to check that out. But I did watch a very, very good movie called Poor Things, for which Emma Stone won Best Actress at the Oscars for. Have either of you seen this?
I've been kind of avoiding it. I don't like movies where people play kind of, you know, like infantile people, which is a literal thing in this movie. Mm-hmm. That's just something that really bothers me. And so I was hoping this movie kind of overcomes that. And I've heard nothing but good things. So
yeah,
maybe Poor I'll stop is... avoiding it. It's streaming now, right?
Yeah, well, I watched it on Hulu. Yeah.
Cool.
And then it's great. I don't know. It's a movie I don't want to like say too much about, but it has a very, very cool style. It's like early Tim Burton turned up to 11. It's off the charts.
Nice.
Very good. Are you guys watching anything? Anything recently?
We watched the first episode of Three Body Problem last night, which as the time we're recording this, it just came out on Netflix. Whether it succeeds or not, TBD, but Netflix is trying to make it their next big kind of like flagship sci-fi fantasy show. The opening episode is very confusing. I liked IGN's headline, which is, I don't have it in front of me, but it was something like, we asked a smart physicist to answer our dumb three-body problem questions. And it kind of needs that. Like, there's a lot of like deep kind of hard science in it that, like, you know, it's not like the show's impenetrable. Like, it's made for a mass market audience, but there's a lot going on in it. I'll just leave it at that. It's cool. I like it. Willing to watch more. That's my sort of review after what episode.
What's the premise?
Dude.
Yeah, I can't even. It's like
I read the books, so like you know, I don't. It's basically a First Contact story, but I think the first season's going to get to that really slowly. So it's probably about like is about the scientists' deaths and stuff like that.
Yeah, the premise of the very first episode is that physics are broken. Like, there's these laws of physics that can't ever change. They're laws, right? But like, physics isn't behaving like it's supposed to be, and why not? That's kind of like the mystery coming out of the first episode.
Okay. And this is the first thing from the Game of Thrones showrunners since then. That, right?
Yeah.
Crazy.
This is kind of a test to see if they have a career after
Game of Thrones. I've had to do a lot of explaining behind the scenes at IGN, even though I mean, it's been a long time since those books were around and popular. And so I can barely remember them, but very few people, I think, are familiar with the material. I'm trying to recall it and help people out, but I probably will just need to reread and watch this. But I wasn't too. After finishing the trilogy, I never cared about watching a show based on it. But now that it has this pedigree, and you know, we'll see how it goes. I'll probably tune in at some point.
Yeah,
it's not the most amazing sci-fi trilogy to read.
Yeah, but one of the more popular. You know, it's like, look, sci-fi is. It's just one of the more popular sci-fi trilogies and book series to come out in like 10 or 20 years. I would say probably.
Yeah, definitely.
Sam, watching anything? I know you're gonna watch Ghostbusters tonight.
Yeah. I was just watching these takes of the Ghostbusters original movie. Cause you know, have you ever seen, there's like an earlier cartoon called Ghostbusters and then like a live action show. They just took that name. So they like did these like alternate takes where they don't say Ghostbusters in that movie, except for in the commercial. Really. There might be some other brief mentions, but they shot different takes of that title. And one of them is Ghost Stoppers, which I think is great. Stopping makes me feel good. Which is what I'll be saying in the middle of this movie, I imagine, after I got a 4, but we'll see. Yeah, gonna see that. I don't know, I watched Priscilla. It was great. Good period piece about Elvis on the side one. But I can talk about games that are not out yet that I've been playing, because I went to GDC's ID at Xbox.
Oh yeah, hit us.
All right, so that was basically extracurricular, even though I guess it was totally curricular. But I did, you know, these are games that are not out. But ID at Xbox is like the indie game stuff. But like, man, these games were polished as hell for the most part. Like games that are, you know, before would have been like, you know, 3 Metroidvanias and a couple Stardew clones. Like that is not what games are anymore. They're like incredibly amazing, like, you know, ray tracing Doom, you know, 2020 clones. It's crazy.
Did you play the flipbook one?
No, I didn't play the flipbook one. No, but I played one that I want to tell y'all about called Echo Weaver, and they're calling it a Metroid Brainia.
Oh my gosh.
Basically it's a Groundhog Day. Like, it's not like a roguelike, but you play and you have all of these skills in the whole game when you start out, but you don't know how to activate them even though you have them. So as you go through the game, it'll be like, if you hold X to do this thing, you will pull out a boomerang that you could have used to warp across the level the whole time. So you don't know it. You could beat the game from the start. So it's like, you know, Fez was like that, or obviously the Jonathan Blow game, Witness. Yeah,
Witness. Right? Like,
technically, if you just know what you're doing, you can just beat the game from the start. So that's really cool. But what you do is you play through the Metroidvania part, and then you only have like 2 minutes to get to the next area. And then you have to restart. But then you kind of realize you can get to it faster by these other skills. Really hard to explain, but check out this game. If there's trailers or anything, check it out. Echo Weaver. Super cool. Luna Abyss was the one that kind of looks like the recent Doom games. Very, very pretty, but with bullet hell aspects where there's just lots of slow-moving bullets you dodge. And first person, that looks really cool. But the one I wanted to get to was called Inkonbini, Japanese game. about running. It's a cozy game about
running. Like, okay, so go ahead. Sorry.
Convenience store. Like, it's, yeah, a, okay, it's about gotcha, running a convenience store.
Gotcha.
And you are a young woman who takes over your aunt's convenience store. That's like a total cozy premise. It's pre-dawn. You have to stock the store for the first time, but the stocking is things like you have to notice what cans are missing from the fridge, put them in there, turn them in the right direction. You have to notice that the ramen is like, you know, whatever. This sounds tremendously boring, and that's because it's a cozy game. It can be boring. It's allowed to be. So the first customer comes in after you open the door, and you realize all the things you did wrong because he's an old guy, and he goes up and he's like, I can barely read this tag. And you go up and ask him, he's like, well, my ramen's here, but it's not what I normally expect. And you realize with horror that like the yellow orange boxes are not the same as the orange yellow boxes, and that you've totally mixed up this poor man, and he's having trouble shopping. And, you know, as he goes about his shopping experience, he talks about like how the aunt that you're working for, you know, won't talk to him anymore. And you're like, oh, that's something interesting. The whole thing ends with, you know, it's just pre-dawn still because he's very old. He comes in first. And he just stands outside in the rain after reference. Like, what the heck? And finally, the developer is like, you should go out and talk to the old man in the rain. You know, that's the nice thing to do. And the sun comes up and the rain stops while he's like standing out there. And it's just adorable. You know, and he tells you how beautiful it is, and then he walks away. So that's the vibe of that game. I thought it was really cool.
What is it? What am I picturing here? What does this game look like? Is it pixel art?
Oh, big. You know what? It's exactly like that arcade laundromat game.
Okay, Arcade Dreams, maybe?
Yeah, so it has like a really stylized look. It's more like, you know, it's a little bit more cartoony than that. The characters are more realistic and stylized, but it's that same thing. You know, you have the back room, you have the front room, third person. It's a third person stalker.
Cool.
Stocking the shelves.
And if any of our listeners...
It might be first person. I think it's first person.
If any of our listeners don't know, convenience stores like 7-Eleven are awesome in Japan.
Yeah. And that's really the other thing you play and you're like, I'm so thirsty and I'm so hungry. And the developer put out like all this Japanese convenience store junk food around the display too, which is
cool. That's really good.
I wanted to say real quick, when you're talking about Ghostbusters, Sam, there's an old Mickey Mouse cartoon called Lonesome Ghosts, I would guess from the 40s or 50s, where I can almost guarantee you the writers of the original Ghostbusters had to have seen that cartoon and gotten their inspiration from it, because Mickey, Donald, and Goofy are ghost, you know, exterminators, where they're ghost exterminators that don't have any business. And then they get a call from these ghosts that are just lonely because they see the ad in the newspaper. So they call them to mess with them in their house. And at one point, when they're looking for the ghost in this house, Goofy turns to the camera and says, I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Oh, what? Come on. This is like, there's like a DuckTales issue from like the late 50s or early 60s, which is just the exact opening for Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm. It's just the exact thing. It's that, like, so that tells you, kids, don't write your own stuff. Just go read really old stuff.
Yeah.
That was my realization. I bought a box set of the old Tintin comics, mm-hmm, and like everything from Indiana Jones and James Bond and all of that. It's all there in those books.
Yeah. That's what Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and whoever wrote Ghostbusters, they had these, they watched all that stuff when they were kids and they're like, I just want to make that again. That brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Rodell, although we do not have a location. Location is undisclosed.
Okay.
And Rodell has an explanation for why this game is picked, but I'll save that for after the game.
Got it.
With that said, let the questioning begin.
Questioning makes me feel good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Damon, you mentioning that Spielberg and Lucas, you know, they just remade their stuff from their childhood. That's as my kids get older, that's like music now, right? Like all these songs that my daughters, you know, they're like, I love this song, and they don't even know. I'm like, I try to like get like old man shouts at cloud where I'm like, that's a song from, you know, the early 2000s. You don't even know.
Are they like cover songs, or are they songs that just sound like it?
I mean, it's the same as like, you know, it's like all the Puff Daddy songs that I listened to in high school. I didn't know that the hooks and chorus of that song from just like disco songs in the 70s and stuff, right? Like, and so like Barbie Girl came back and Blue came back.
Oh,
like
weird.
All these songs are back and they have new pop stars, you know, doing new verses over them. Anyway, rant over, but it's just an unexpected aspect of parenthood is like, you know, it reveals itself to me like an onion every month. And that's been a new wrinkle lately.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So 20 questions. Okay. Did this game come out in the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
No.
Is it a console exclusive?
Yes.
I like that. Is it exclusive to a PlayStation console?
No.
What about Nintendo?
Yes.
Ooh.
We asked some new questions last time that I wish we would remember, and I don't remember them now. So, great.
Oh, yeah. I missed last week. I was traveling. Okay. Nintendo console after the 90s. Was this exclusive to the Wii?
No, that's five.
Did this come out in a cartridge format?
Yes.
Is it on Switch?
Yes.
Was this game
terrible taste in cartridges?
Yeah, they taste bad. is this game developed or published by Nintendo?
Yes.
I think it's Animal Crossing.
It's a nice anniversary of it right now.
It was so it came
4 years in one day.
It was an international phenomenon, absolutely took over the world, you know, is one of the best selling Nintendo games of all time. And they released like two updates and they're like, now we're good. Mm-hmm. We don't need to do any more Animal Crossing stuff.
People can just play this for free now. It's not a big deal.
it's very weird, even by Nintendo standards.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know. Is this game featured? Do you play as a Mario character in this game?
No.
You play as a human?
No. That's 10.
Animal Crossing, you play as a human.
I was going to say, you do play as a human in Animal Crossing. But really, humans are kind of animals, too. So.
Right. You don't play as a human in Zelda, right?
Yeah, he's an elf.
Or sometimes a Hylian. I don't know which one, Hylian.
Yeah, well, I don't know. What's the difference? He's got pointy ears.
So Kiri don't grow up.
Ah, okay. That's right. Yeah, there's actual lore here. I'm making goofs. I mean, there's arms. He plays a robot.
Hell yeah. I hope
the
it's
human
arms.
Question's a good question because that eliminates Metroid. I'm really weirded out that Mario is a human, but then he is he's like thigh high on the humans in New Donk City. They're maybe like norm.
Maybe it's they're Pikmin.
Olimar is a human.
No. They're from some other planet.
Oh, yeah.
They land on Earth, potentially. It's unclear.
Yeah, you're right. They're from...
really tiny.
I can't remember the name of their planet.
Well, now, if it's not Earth, then there's another planet where a Nintendo exists and makes Nintendo hardware.
That's the multiverse.
They're space explorers, and then the planet they crash land on is implied to be Earth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is this a sci-fi game?
That one's twisting me up in knots. Let's just say no.
I'm all twisted up.
Well, eliminated Pikmin.
Just breathe.
I don't know how to breathe.
It's you in there. How do we work? I don't know how to work the body.
How do I work the body?
Dad, breathe. Let's see. Let's go with, is this a multiplayer focused game?
I mean, what do you mean if it's multiplayer focused? You mean like that's like the primary way of playing?
The fact that you're chipped up on this means it's not so many games.
Yeah, I'm.
Let's say, well, I don't know.
Maybe it's 1-2 Switch or whatever it's called.
I think you should ask that question in a different way.
Does it have multiplayer?
Yes.
Okay. Is this from like the launch window of Switch?
No.
What are we, Snipper wait, clips so, or 1-2.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you play as a human, so it's like that was such a good question because, like, you know, not Zelda, it's not Splatoon, but we eliminated Mario games.
Yeah, are Mii's humans?
Yes, horrifying ones.
Because it could be that there was a Wii Sports.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we should definitely know what this is, but I'm feeling slightly tripped up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's arms.
Maybe it's ARMS. Yeah. Is this the only game in its series?
No.
Aww. Mm-hmm. Nintendo developed or published.
Does what this have motion controls?
I don't know.
What about a Pokemon game? What about
Pokemon or Advance Wars?
Yeah. Is this a Pokemon game?
No, that's 15.
Oh, 15. Oh, mm-hmm. We're going to fumble it.
It's pretty good, though. It's pretty good if we do.
I think you guys forgot the answer to a question, by the way.
Okay. Is that because we... that's right, because we've been going back and forth on this, because he said that you're not a human in it. That's why we eliminated Animal Crossing.
Oh, did I do it backwards? I did it backwards.
Yeah. So it couldn't have been any of the last 10 questions.
So it could still be shoot. Okay, that's my bad. I'll own that. That's on me.
Still could be ARMS, though.
Wait, because you
said they're robots or something, right?
Wait, I'm still confused. So you're
not a human in this game.
You're not a human in this game. Don't not play as a human. Okay, so that could still be Zelda then.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no multiplayer in it. I don't know what's weird about the sci-fi question.
No, there is multiplayer in it, Justin.
What's going on? It's late for me. It's 5:38 on a Friday.
Yeah, on a Friday. No, that's the worst part about it, right? Yeah.
That's my excuse.
So, you know, I think that means it's Splatoon, right?
Yeah, they're squid people. But that's very multiplayer focused, I'd say.
That's true. That's true. That's true. So there's Smash Brothers.
Smash Mario Kart. Like, I eliminated all those. Well, it can't be a Mario game, though. But yeah, Smash.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. It's not the only one in its series. Like, I'm still confused. Is there a reason it can't be Zelda to be...
I don't know. I don't think so.
I mean, I could it just be Tears of the Kingdom?
It seems fine to be Zelda. I can't remember at this point, though.
Does this game... Could you construct...
It can't be ARMS because ARMS is a one-off. I forgot about that one.
We don't have enough questions left. Okay. Is this a Zelda game?
No.
Oh, no. So maybe Advance Wars, maybe that was a good one.
No, you play as a human in that.
Isn't that what? Oh no, I'm losing it, guys.
Maybe it is Pikmin then.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
No. Sci-fi. Sorry, sci-fi eliminated that one. We asked about that one.
But Damon said it was sci-fi.
No, he said it was not sci-fi. He couldn't really answer that. He said, for these purposes, we're not going to go with sci-fi.
Are Toads human? There was Captain Toad.
Mm-hmm.
They're little freaks.
Let's see.
What have we... So there's Fire Emblem.
Yeah, that's a good one. But you're humans.
Yeah, we're looking for games where you're human.
No, not a human. Not a human. Write it down. Sticky note.
Are you a human? What are you in Bayonetta? Are witches human?
Is the main character of this game a character in Smash Brothers that you can play as?
Yes.
Oh, that's such a good question. The Nintendo published.
So think of your amiibo. Maybe it's Kirby.
Oh. Yeah, I've still been picturing humans this whole time.
Kirby I
can't even remember what that game's called. And I was just playing it with my kids.
It's Kirby called
Forgotten Land. Kirby in the Forgotten Land.
Yeah. Is this a Kirby game?
Yes.
Okay, we got there.
Do we have one more question?
Yep, one more question and a guess.
So we need to, I can't even remember which one, but there was a port. There was a Kirby Return to Dreamland. Was this a updated, no, was this an original Kirby game that wasn't an updated remake of a previous Kirby game?
Yes.
Okay. So is it Kirby in the Forgotten Land?
Yes. 20 questions.
Yeah.
Nicely job. You did get there.
Oh, Kirby and the Friday feeling. Get to Justin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was 2022.
I think you guys may have forgotten the answer to one of these questions. It was a very nice thing to say at Game
Boy. I appreciated that. He said one thing, and I completely heard a different thing. To be fair, once Scoop is over, we're going to order Papa John's. It's takeout night.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds great.
Are you doing the garlic dipping sauce?
100%, yeah. And then nobody else in the family likes it but me, so I just get to guzzle it all.
Really, it seems so likable as just like a pizza lubricant that I can't believe they don't like it.
I know, but my kids, they don't eat. They think they don't like anything. Like, just try a bite. Like, no.
Yeah.
Fine. More for me.
No.
Is this a sci-fi game?
Yeah. Hell yeah, it is. Post-apocalypse.
It's also oddly post-apocalyptic, yeah.
I knew that. I don't know.
No, I think you are right to answer it that way because we needed to eliminate Pikmin. I want to hear next week a 15-minute essay from why the characters in Pikmin are actually human from Justin, because he did make some good points there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, humanoid. The show is over, so I'm hesitant to even bring it up, but what does it mean to be human?
Rodell says, because the reason he picked this game, he says, my son loves to play a video game 20 questions. He's 7, but he always asks popular questions like, is this game part of a franchise or does this character wear a hat? Really? While he's only 7, he is pretty good at guessing games. His suggestion for this week is Kirby and the Forgotten Land. It's one of his favorite games he's played with me. You guys are the best. He would be so thrilled if his name was said on the podcast. His name is Lucas, but goes by Luke because of Street Fighter VI.
Wow, Lucas, you almost stumped us. That was a good one.
That was good. And nice job,
Luke.
I like to play that game with my family as well. So great choice.
Thanks, Luke.
Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for video game 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. And that's going to be all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to both Sam and Justin. Thank you to Jobert working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. My name is Damon. I'm going to go watch Extraction 2 tonight on Justin's recommendation.
Fun fact. It's Pac-Man with a safety pin through his face.
This is IGN Game Scoop and we're out.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care. Dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.